Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show that helps you lead as Christ would have you lead if he were you. Whether you're listening live or one of the many thousands who listen via the podcast, great to have you along. And if you're new to the show, a reminder, the show is available on demand via premierradio.com or via iTunes or Podbean. Now, chances are you're probably listening to this with a roof over your head, but a staggering 320,000 people in the UK don't have a roof over their head at all, according to figures published in November 2018. This was a rise of 13,000 or 4% on the previous year's figures and equivalent to 36 new people becoming homeless every day. Thankfully, statutory bodies and charities are at work seeking to alleviate the problem, and I'm joined this week by Mitch Mina, the Territorial Director of Homelessness at the Salvation Army, a ministry and group of churches famous for their care for the poor. So welcome, Mitch, to the Leadership File.
Thanks, Andy. Good to be here.
So how did you become involved with the Salvation Army and their homeless ministry, homelessness ministry in particular?
So, Andy, first and foremost, the Salvation Army is a Christian church.
Yeah.
That's what drives me. That's what drives all that we seek to do. I've been involved with the Salvation Army both as my church and in employment for, you'll find this hard to believe, for 41 years.
Wow, yes.
So my background is I'm a social worker, probation officer, trained, qualified, working with young offenders. And I moved into homelessness about 25 years ago. And I just feel, for me, it's very much my vocation, and I have a real interest and a passion that we need to do something to help the less fortunate and those who are vulnerable in our society. So that's why I do what I do. And I think for the Salvation Army, it's about our expression of love and reaching out to the whosoever.
Right. Amen. Amen. And the leading causes of homelessness, I've read various things. What would your perspective be on that?
So I'd love to say this is the one reason
yes.
that causes homelessness, but unfortunately there's no such thing as one reason. There's a combination of factors, and I think people need to just understand that the homelessness presenting as being homeless, underneath that, there are a number of issues. So things such as, first and foremost, there is a lack of housing. That's a fact throughout the United Kingdom. But added to that, there are things such as mental health, addictions, dysfunctional family life, people leaving prison, people leaving hospital, people leaving the armed forces, this big issue of mental health, people not being able to sustain relationships. And for me, what I've seen over the years is people lacking in purpose. So there's no purpose to life, and therefore they can't come to grips with this coping mechanism they need to be able to sustain a tenancy and to live in a community because of who they are and the background to their personal circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I quoted 320,000 rough sleepers, but sometimes the figures are underreported because councils have set, you know, their targets are set, and they want to meet those targets. And, you know, in all due respect, sometimes they underestimate the real problem. What would your feel be?
Andy, I don't really want to argue with you about statistics. You know, with the greatest respect,
it's a lot of people,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of people. Statistics can say whatever you want them to say.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to disrespect what's been recorded, what's been reported out there. All I know is from what I've seen with my own eyes, with the people I've met. So I'm fortunate and privileged that the Salvation allow me to travel throughout the United Kingdom. So I get in and out of the big cities and the towns. And there is clearly the demand for our service and the service of other providers has increased over the years. And clearly rough sleeping is a massive issue, not only to London, but to the other cities and towns. There is obvious things that you see right before you. So I would say there is a lot of people in need of supported accommodation, and there is a lack of housing available. But I'm pleased that the government is trying to do something about it. But of course, we're in this new era of devolved governments. So we're fortunate we work with Westminster government, we work with the Scottish government, we work with the Welsh Assembly government, we work with the Northern Ireland Executive. And so we've got a real feel that there is a massive issue out there, and the statistics are enough. Whether they're right or not, I would dare suggest, open to challenge, but I dare suggest that the statistics that have been provided, we can add to that, because I don't think they reveal the reality of it.
Now, I understand that the homeless person's legislation says that every statutory authority is obliged to provide temporary accommodation to a homeless person. How does your work kind of interact with that? Is that really the case, or do they... the statutory authorities fail to do what they should be doing, or are they offering it and the homeless people are not picking it up? Talk to us about how it is on the street, as it were.
Okay, maybe not on the street, but the Homelessness Reduction Act, April 2018, came into being, and that was welcomed. Yeah. And everybody welcomed it. You couldn't argue with it.
Okay.
So the desire was that that's for England and Wales only, of course. But the gist behind it was about dealing with the individual and trying to offer that immediate response to an individual. It's about trying to be more preventative. But the reality is, the will is there, the desire is there, but the resources are limited. And so each local authority may well have that duty of care to help people who are experiencing homelessness, but if they don't have the resources and if the demand, and I think that's perhaps the point I want to make with you today, the demand is greater than the provision, and therefore we often experience this hitting your head off a brick wall type of thing, because you can only do so much with the resources you've got available to you, and therefore not everybody gets caught up in that sort of preventative measure.
Right, right. Okay, well, we can unpack that a little bit later, perhaps. But I understand. I did some research, obviously, for our conversation. The removal of homelessness camps by councils has trebled in the last 5 years. So it would suggest the problem is rising in terms of homelessness. I mentioned the stats, but it does seem to be increasing.
Yeah, camps. What a terrible state of affairs.
Yeah,
right?
That
people have had to create camps, and what we mean is people bring their tents and they bring their cardboard boxes, and I don't want to overplay that or overstate that, but I've seen it and it's ugly, you know. It's just not pleasant, and it's not humane either. For me, the question is, why do people need to do that? Clearly there is insufficient resources, and I keep going back to that, and it's not making a political statement, it's just being factual. There is insufficient resources for local authorities to make provision for people. So what a number of people do is they get together and they create this camp, but it's not a pleasant sight. But within that camp, there are some lovely people who are in desperate need of support and care and provision. And therefore, what they do is they find that safety net being in that camp. But not a number of local authorities, of course, they're seeking to rid the towns and the cities of these camps. That's okay, but where do the people go? You know, it's okay to clear the campsites, as we call them, but where do people go to find that safe haven? And I think that's the issue that has not really been addressed yet.
Okay. And I've known, connected to our church, you know, homeless folk who've chosen not to take up the provision because they prefer to be on the streets. And of course, that gives people who are a little bit blasé about this whole issue there are homes around and these people are not taking them. So what would be your take on how common that is?
So I meet people like that too, and in my church, but actually in our services, and as I wander the streets, I don't go poking my nose into everybody's business, but I do chat to people out there. You've got to understand what the reality is. So I just wonder why, and that's a question I ask myself often, why would somebody choose to sleep rough? Why, other than there have been insufficient resources, but there are a number of people who choose. So you take somebody and you offer them an appropriate supported housing or a hostel or whatever it is, and they refuse it. So I think the fundamental question is, why is that? And I think you need time to engage with these people, because They've got a story to tell.
Yeah.
And it's when you sit down and listen to the story, you get an understanding of why they're in that position. And often it's to do with history, their personal history. It's to do with their mental well-being. It's to do with experiences they've had in earlier years. And they think it's easier and safer for them to live in the street. I don't get that. I don't get it. But we've got to just acknowledge that for some people, that's their choice. But there are lots of people, it's not their choice. And it's for those folks that I think we need to make sure there's appropriate provision for them.
So it's probably quite a very small percentage of people who would choose.
I would suggest it's a small percentage of people who choose and who you offer accommodation to and they still turn it down.
Yeah.
And often you give people accommodation and they don't have that coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And so therefore they're asked to leave and they're back on the street. And so I think we've got to address this thing. What do we need to do? We, the Salvation Army, what these other providers in the government, what do we need to do to make appropriate accommodation and support to allow folk to transition into that place and find a sense of safety, a comfort and support that allows them to move on into a more secure environment?
Wonderful. Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Mitch Mina. Mitch is the Territorial Director of Homelessness at the Salvation Army. And we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Mitch Mina, the Territorial Director of Homelessness at the Salvation Army, a ministry and group of churches famous for their care for the poor. Of course, we were a little bit gloomy in our first part of the show as we outlined the sad and fact of maybe a third of a million people, maybe more, who don't have a roof over their head in the UK today. But looking a little bit more now at the second half, at how the Salvation Army has responded and is responding to that, and Mitch's work as leader of that. So talk about Lifehouses, Mitch, and the kind of things they do.
Well, there's a question. Lifehouse for us is a brand that we, the word hostel,
yes,
some years ago we felt was inappropriate.
Okay.
It conjured up all sorts of mindsets, more about warehousing people. And so my predecessor ran a campaign with people living in our centres, and they came up with this name, Lifehouse, with a little strapline underneath, more than a place to stay.
Yeah.
And I think that's crucial to who we are and what we do. We've got quite a range of lifehouses in the United Kingdom with the Republic of Ireland. So we have male-only lifehouses, we've got female-only lifehouses, we've got family services, we've got services specific for young people, 16 to 21. We've got a bail and probation service. We've got a domestic violence service. They all come under the title of Homelessness Services Unit for the Salvation Army of Lifehouses. We've got a rehab service. We've got a Housing First project, which is relatively new to us. We've got a couple of night shelters. We are supporting Syrian refugees. We've got a couple of safe houses for people who've experienced human trafficking. And we have a bus project, which is not a lifehouse. It's a bus. It's a double-decker bus that we've converted, and that goes into the street, and we provide food, we provide counselling, we provide primary health care, we provide a clothing store, and that's just a great opportunity to engage with people who would be in the street. So that's what we offer. We've got about 100 services in the United Kingdom.
Right. Yes.
And we are accommodating each night 3,200 bed spaces, and we engage with approximately 8,000 individuals on an annual basis.
Right.
So that's a lot of people.
So the Lifehouse, how long would someone stay there typically? Is it a bridge to somewhere else, or does it become a home?
Well, because of where we are today with government funding, local authority funding, it's all about contracts, and the contract, the local authority determine how long someone should stay with us. So that ranges from 3 months to 2 years. It depends on the area we're working in and the contract that's available to us. But wherever we get the opportunity, we try to engage with people. We try to develop their skill base. We try to build their self-esteem. We try to reconnect them with family, if that's at all possible. The important thing is, regardless of how long we've got people with us, I'm quite clear about this. It's about we seek to give people a hand up rather than a hand out.
Okay.
And that's important for their self-esteem. And we focus on what we can do with you rather than what we can do to you.
I see.
They need to take responsibility, but we will support them and work alongside them and journey with them.
Right. Not dissimilar, I guess, to the third world situation where organisations like Tear Fund have moved away from merely giving money, but actually instead they seek to train and help local people to, you know,
what I've discovered, Andy, is that many people who come into our life houses, people we engage with, they've got a story to tell. They've lived a life, and many of them have the skills, but they've maybe lost sight of them, you know, to live a good life in the community. So I think our responsibility is to help them regain those skills. Mm. And the little kind of phrase that I often use as I go round and talk to people is, this is not what you've fallen to. This is where you start to rebuild your life.
Yeah.
And if we can grasp that, that's about individual, valuing the individual, and bringing out from them that skill base, I've got that knowledge, and start to regain, they start to regain that self-esteem. That's so important.
Yeah, sure, sure. And no doubt there are financial challenges to all this. These, you know, these things cost money.
Oh, well.
Where do you want to start?
Where do you want to start with this one? So, I mean, we continue to find a great challenge in finance. Mm. That's a bomb. We are so grateful. The Salvation Army is so grateful to the public and to trusts and to donors who give generously every year, some every month, some every week, to the Salvation Army, to the work of the Salvation Army. We're grateful for that. But our business is about people. And in terms of working with homelessness, that's about property as well. So we have a number of our own buildings. They need to be maintained. And to provide the quality service, which I believe we do, you're required to have a quality staff team, and therefore that costs money.
Sure.
For salaries, for training, and for all the added value things that we offer people. And so financially, it's for homelessness services, for the Salvation Army. If I tell you, we are operating on a £54 million budget.
Wow.
For the United Kingdom with the Republic of Ireland. That's a hefty sum. But we are so grateful because the income stream comes from local authority grants, come from personal payments from residents, and we are blessed because the public are very generous to the Salvation Army, and we use their income, we use that income to help us do the work that we do.
Sure, sure. And the leadership challenges in all this for you, Mitch, you're the territorial director. I don't know if you can explain what you do, what that means.
Salvation Army, several times I've said to you that United Kingdom with the Republic of Ireland. So the territory, that's the Salvation Army in the United Kingdom with the Republic of Ireland. That's our geographical spread.
Right, right.
So I'm based in London at the head office. My responsibility is for the strategic and operational management of our homelessness services, but I don't do that alone. We've got about 1,600 members of staff working within homelessness services spread throughout. So we go up as far as Peterhead in the North Scotland. We go down as far as the Isle of Wight. We go over to Isle of Man. We're in Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland. So we're well spread across the whole of what we call the territory, but the United Kingdom with the Republic of Ireland, just because they're part of who we are. So for me, the leadership challenge is I need to make sure that what we do continues to be mission-focused and continues to be strategically relevant, i.e. the Salvation Army is first and foremost a Christian church. We exist to save souls, grow saints and serve suffering humanity. And I'm quite clear about this, we can't do one without the other two.
Sure.
So they come as a package. I think I need to keep focused. I need to make sure my team keep focused because it's about people. It's about the people we serve, as well as serving our leaders and our funders. We need to serve the people who come to the Salvation Army. I think we need to keep training, relevant training before us. And what I would say to you in terms of leadership challenge, Andy, is that we are finding people are more complex now than they ever were. I think people have always been complex. Issues have always been there, but drug, alcohol, mental health issues, and marital breakdowns, dysfunctional families, they are massive issues for the people we work with. And I want the staff that we employ at local settings to understand that and to have the skills and the knowledge to help meet those needs of the individuals who come before us. But you know what? In a world of shifting values, there are standards that remain. And I think we need to keep at the very front of who we are. We are a Christian church. We're a Christian focus on the people that come our way. And whatever we do needs to be about often the possibility of life in all its fullness and transformation.
Absolutely, fabulous. And the things you've learned along the way about leadership?
Well, I've learned patience, because I wasn't always a patient man, let me tell you. I've also learned quite seriously that the Salvation Army cannot go this alone. We can't do this in our own strength. We need to work in partnership with other providers. Collaboration, partnership are key words, and they're not just words, that we need to be serious and intentional about that. I also have discovered that a change takes time, whether that's organisational change or an individual's life changing. But I've also come to the realisation, if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always got.
Right,
So we can't continue to just go alone. We can't continue just to provide a roof over somebody's head. Mm. We need to engage with individuals. We need to tap into the expertise that's out there and work in collaboration with other providers. A few years ago, I'd have said, oh, we can do this. Mm. We don't need the help of other people. But that was arrogant. But actually, it was also a lack of knowledge on my part. So over the years, I've come to a better realisation. And I look forward that people have got potential to change. And there are people who've come through our service and their lives have changed for the better. And the start of transformation is so evident.
Sure. How could listeners get involved to discover more? Presumably they go to your website.
Yes, Salvation Army, www.salvationarmy.org.uk. And there is a homelessness link there. Okay. So that will give you information about all our life houses. It will give you contact details. Mm. There is some literature there. And be very happy to have conversation with people through the web.
Sure.
and drop us an email and we'll pick up on that.
Presumably the life houses typically here in the bigger cities, are they?
So London, Bristol, Liverpool, Birmingham, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Belfast, Dublin. Yeah, the big. But we've got life houses in other smaller parts of the country, smaller towns, because homelessness is no longer a big city issue. It's across the whole of the country.
Yeah, sure. Well, Mitch, we appreciate your coming in. So that's Mitch Mena. His surname, in case you wondered, is M-E-N-A-G-H. Presumably you hail from the Scotland.
Somewhere? Well, yes, this accent's very, very Scottish, but the Mena name has got Irish roots.
Is it?
So
oh, there you go.
My father was... he's got some Irish blood in him. So,
fabulous. Yeah. Okay, so that's Mitch Mena, and thank you so much for all that you've shared today with us. So Mitch is the Territorial Director of Homelessness at the Salvation Army, and as he said, you can connect with the website, the Salvation Army website, and find out more if that's particularly of interest to you, or if sadly, if you're listening to this and this is something as afflicting and affecting you personally or people that you directly know. Obviously, you can listen to the Leadership File via podcast. Go to Premier's website and you can listen to this one and archive versions of the Leadership File. There's several hundred there via iTunes or Podbean. And join us again next Sunday at 3:30 for another show. This is Andy Peck thanking you for being with us, and God bless.
You've been listening to the Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.